I've called Miss DeWitt, the specialist. We've set up an appointment for next week. I would feel enthused about this had the situation not escalated last night. Seems my son's behavior has taken another turn for the worst. Unfortunately, I seem to be the one and only target for his nightly antics. Many times during the ordeal, including now, I've asked but a simple question that I can never seem to get a clear answer to. Why me? While we're on the subject of questions, another one's haunted me as of late. Why does my son act in the manner that he does? I really need to know why. And then, there's the dreams. What's their significance? I could understand if it were only the one, but this is not the case. It seems that every time I close my eyes, a new film reel begins rolling. With every new movie starring my son as the antagonist. Every narrative is structured differently, but the plot remains the same. I'm always frozen and unable to move whilst my son finds new and interesting ways to terrify me, before finally making his way to wherever I am. I then wake up in a cold sweat, as frightened as I was while asleep. I suppose it doesn't matter how each narrative is woven. I always end up caught in my son's malevolent web. Even so, these nightmares could just be the byproduct of an overactive, anxiety-ridden imagination. They're probably meaningless. At least that's what I tell myself to feel better about them. But that doesn't necessarily mean they aren't meaningless. Besides, the fear I feel while dreaming is nothing compared to what I feel while awake. Like the feeling I had last night, for instance. Instead of explaining to you the events as they unfolded, I'll start off by portraying them through the footage, if only for the sake of transparency. You'll understand what I mean as we begin. Up to a specific point, the footage was almost identical to the video I captured the other night. My son stood up on his own and faced the camera, followed by what I am now convinced might be a perturbed and menacing gaze. This is when things get a little strange, or should I say, stranger. After a few moments of my son staring, the camera seems to fall off the shelf I had placed it on, landing lens first onto the floor. That's when I woke up. Before continuing, I'd like to share some of my thoughts on what might have happened. It's true that the camera may have simply fallen off the shelf, but I swear that I placed it in a position that left it secure. It also may be important to note that nothing else that was on the shelf had fallen off, so whatever did cause the camera's untimely descent didn't disturb anything else. I personally believe that my son somehow caused the camera to fall when he stared at it. I'm aware how that sounds, but it isn't as far-fetched when considering everything else that's been going on. I'm not really sure one way or the other. But now we'll get back to the incident in question. Now from this point forward, I'll explain the events from my perspective, if only for a clearer picture than the fallen camera can provide. I woke to a loud thud and jumped up immediately. I was worried that it might have been my son falling out of his crib. Upon further inspection, I noticed that he once again had vanished. After tossing his blankets around his crib looking for him, I heard the once familiar sound of my son crying. I abruptly stopped my search and stood still, stunned. My son had not displayed a single emotion since his odd behavior started, let alone shed a tear. I was almost certainly taken aback by this. I took a moment to process everything before regaining my composure. The sound of my son crying was coming from the direction of the living room. I ran out of there as fast as I could, but the crying stopped almost as suddenly as it had begun. I turned the light on, but my son was nowhere to be found. The crying started up again a few moments later, only then it was coming from the kitchen around the corner. I ran out there only to have the crying stop once more, to find that my son was not there either. What was going on? I sat down on the kitchen floor and attempted to calm myself down. I hadn't noticed before, but I was shaking from the adrenaline. How is this happening? How is any of this possible? I asked myself these questions, but knew not the answers nor how to find them. Didn't even find my son, for that matter. It seemed my nightmares were bleeding into my waking life, and there wasn't a single thing I could do to stop it. I continued to sit on the floor, unable to keep from shaking. And this is when the sound of crying started up again. This time, it was coming from back in the bedroom where the impromptu late-night adventure began. As I ran from the kitchen to the bedroom, my heart pounded in my chest. I was scared. I didn't know what I would find upon entering my bedroom, but whatever it could have been simply scared the hell out of me. And still, I had to keep running. I had to see if my son was safe, even if he wasn't himself. And so that's exactly what I did. Upon entering the room, the sound of crying ceased. I ran over to the crib and I saw my son lying there. He was once again staring at me with that eerie expression of his. I was relieved that he was safe, but still frightened by what had happened. My breathing became irregular and a tightness formed in my chest. It was the onset of a panic attack, I think. I needed to take yet another moment to pull myself together. I walked over to my bed and I sat down, hoping that I wouldn't fall apart right then and there. I had to stay focused and keep my family functional, somehow. The stress and lack of sleep were taking a very large toll on me. Despite this, I tried my best to explain the night's events to myself in a logical fashion. It became quickly apparent that I could not. While replaying these events in my mind, however, I did realize something. I stood up and I walked over to the crib where my son was lying. I hesitantly reached my hand out towards him. I carefully brushed my fingers across his cheeks. And I noticed that they were not wet. There had been no tears. My appointment with Miss DeWitt was earlier today. I must say that I do feel a bit strange. I don't really think I can trust anyone anymore. My son and I are going to have to deal with this issue on our own. It's apparent to me that nobody can help us. Not Dr. Harrison, not Miss DeWitt, not a single human being on this earth. As alone as this revelation makes me feel, I somehow feel empowered at the same time. It's put things into perspective and is allowing me to take my life into my own hands. No matter how messy my situation is. Deep down, I know that I can get through this. At least I hope I can. Allow me to explain what happened. See, after another restless night with my son, I sluggishly began getting ready for my appointment with Miss DeWitt. For whatever reason, I was very nervous. It was odd, as I had no reason to feel that way. I should have been excited, if anything. After all, this quite possibly could have been the first step in helping my son with whatever ailed him. Even still, I did not shake the feeling. Skipping breakfast due to a loss of appetite from my nerves, I quickly left with my son. The drive took roughly 45 minutes. Mr. Witt's office was in the next town over. I wish that I could say that the drive went smoothly, but it did not. About 15 minutes in, I decided to check on my son with the aid of my rearview mirror. He'd been sitting the whole time, but I put off on checking him until that moment due to my own fear of his unnatural gaze. I knew I wouldn't like what I saw when looking in the mirror, but I didn't know to what extent. Upon looking at my mirror, I noticed that my son was gone. His booster seat was still there, but it was empty. My heart sunk as I quickly turned into the breakdown lane and slammed on my brakes. I stumbled out of my car in haste and opened the back door. I scoured the entire vehicle looking for him. I flipped over his booster seat, tore everything out of the car that wasn't tied down. I nearly ripped up the upholstery looking for him, and despite my best efforts, my son was nowhere to be found. I wondered for a moment if I had left my son at home. I tried to remember everything I had done that morning, but it was all a blur. I blame this on my lack of sleep. Just before convincing myself that I needed to drive back home and see if he was there, I realized that I hadn't looked everywhere just yet. See, I know it sounds a bit crazy, but I felt a need to check in the trunk. And it is true, I didn't look there, but it was, of course, with a good reason. How in the world could a baby get from his booster seat to the trunk in a moving car? But then again, how could he do any of the things that he'd been doing recently? So maybe, just maybe, my son was in there. In a confused stupor, I reluctantly unlocked and opened the trunk. Surely enough, my son was there. He was lying on his back in the same way that he lies in his crib, and of course, staring up at me. I would have been shocked that he was in there, but I was more fed up. My son's hijinks were mentally exhausting. They continued to take their toll on me, even in the middle of the highway. I wanted it all to stop. I put my son back in his booster seat, and got back on the road and pretended that nothing had happened. This was not before checking him for any injuries or bruising. There were none. This didn't surprise me either, nothing did. I chose to focus on the road and journey ahead as opposed to the peculiarities that seemed to control my day-to-day life. It was all I could do to keep from going completely and irrevocably insane. I arrived at Mistewit's office a little late due to the incident on the highway. Because of this, I quickly grabbed my son. Luckily, he was still there, and I rushed into the building, hoping that she would still take us. I hurried up to her office doors and opened it, revealing two people behind it. The two people were none other than Dr. Harrison and, presumably, Mistewit. They had apparently been discussing something before I barged in. Confused, I nearly shouted at them, demanding to know what was going on. Dr. Harrison came over to me, ignoring my son altogether, and placed a hand on my shoulder. He told me that Miss DeWitt was not a specialist in infant behavior. She was a specialist in adult behavior. In other words, he said, she was a psychiatrist. I was dumbfounded. Was this some sort of intervention? Why the secrecy? What exactly was their motive here? Again, I asked, why me? I tried to turn around and leave, but Dr. Harrison pleaded with me. He seemed genuinely concerned about my well-being, as much as I disliked the idea of talking to a therapist. This was the first time Dr. Harrison had shown any real concern during this ordeal. So I decided it would be my best interest to humor him, if only as a courtesy, and thought about seeing a therapist anyway. So what did I really have to lose? Dr. Harrison said that he would take care of my son during the session, so I could be alone with Mr. Witt. He said there could be no distractions or disruptions. I knew I could trust him with my son, so I handed him over. Dr. Harrison awkwardly held him, almost as if he'd never held an infant before. This was weird, but I brushed it off. Before long, I was sitting in a chair across from the one and only Mr. Witt. It was time to open up, it seemed. Mr. Witt was young and attractive. She had long black hair tied up in a bun, glasses, a white button-up shirt, a black skirt that came down to her knees. Her demeanor was alluring, and her voice possessed a certain charm about it. It was comforting as well as pleasing. There was the right amount of sex appeal there to still consider her appearance to be one of elegance. In class, I could see right through this ploy. The manner in which she conducted herself was created to make it easier for me to spill my guts, so to speak. It was a ruse to get me to divulge my inner workings, my secrets and darkest thoughts. I decided that I would not succumb to her prying ways. I began by talking about normal things. I talked about my place of employment, my home, the people I associated with. Without noticing it, her questions became more and more intrusive. She asked about my childhood, my parents, and important events in my life. I didn't notice her verbal intrusion at first because she shared with me her past as well. With every story or answer I gave, she offered one to me in return. We even laughed together about some of these stories. It was nice. To be honest, it felt like I was on a first date. She was very easy to talk to, and I had no issue with giving her the information that she desired, but that's when she went too far. After discussing some arbitrary events from my college days, Ms. DeWitt seemingly jumped the gun and asked me about my wife. Like glass absurdly shattering, the immersion was broken. Still, similar to some first dates I've had, we began to argue, and I mean really argue. It went on for what must have been an hour. We began yelling at each other. I didn't know why, but I felt like I was fighting with a good friend. At times, it felt like I was fighting with my wife. I could say now that Ms. DeWitt was very good at her job and is quite the actor. Like many fights I've had with friends, this one eventually came to an end in a calm and collected manner. We actually made up and apologized to each other. It even felt like we were closer because of it. I guess there was something about this woman that made it difficult to stay mad at her. In fact, in any case, I decided to discuss with her what happened to my wife. She didn't even have to ask again. I just started talking. Bewildered and surprised, she sat down on her desk and intently listened. My wife and I had a picture-perfect relationship. I met her in college. we instantly became close friends. We knew everything about each other and depended on one another for support during tough times. We could always count on the other one being there. It was a great feeling to have, just knowing this. We knew that we liked each other, but never once did we talk about it. On the day of our college graduation, I simply pulled out a ring and asked her to marry me. She shouted the word yes at me before attacking me with a tight embrace. It was a very spur-of-the-moment thing for me to do. I didn't plan it either. The idea came to mind that very day, and even still, I have never been more sure of anything in my entire life. After settling down and putting our college degrees to use, my wife became pregnant with our son. It wasn't planned. The two of us couldn't have been happier about it. I, for one, could think of no other person I wanted to have a child with. Things were looking up for us until about 9 months later, that is. I won't go into too much detail, but my wife died while giving birth to our son. The list of complications that led to her demise was a very long one. It was so long, in fact, that it made her death seem inevitable. I've since come to terms with her passing, putting all of my love and affection into our son, not only for my sake, but for hers. That's why I'm so desperate in my hunt for answers. He's all I have left of her. He's all I have left of us. Miss DeWitt didn't interrupt me even once. She was turning out to be not only a great listener, but also a great friend. I actually felt good about opening up to her. I'd never told anyone about my wife before, or at least not to that length. It was cathartic in a way. But of course, Mr. Witt and I were not friends. We had just met. This was a business call, a favor, to Dr. Harrison. Their following questions reflected this. After hearing my long and drawn-out tale, Mr. Witt asked about my son and what happened to him. I had no idea what she was talking about. She asked confusing questions about what happened to him right after he was born, and I simply told her that I took him home. She continued her assault of questions, but my answers were the same each time. What did this have to do with anything anyway? Seeing as she could not get through to me, Miss DeWitt took off her glasses and stopped asking questions. Instead, she decided to tell me some things. The first thing she told me caused a sharp chill to resonate through my entire body. She told me that my son is dead. Before continuing, she gave me a moment to react. I most certainly did. I yelled at her like I did before, but she did not yell back. She was letting me alleviate my own anger, it seemed. I attempted to storm off, but she insisted that I sit down and listen to what she had to say. Whatever pseudo-friendship we may have had ended that moment she told me my son was no longer alive, but she still had a comforting charm about her. So I decided to listen to her, but that did not mean that I had to believe her. I sat down in my chair. I remained silent. I looked at Mr. Witt angrily while she spoke nothing but lies. She told me that due to the same complications that killed my wife, my son too passed away shortly after being born. It was her expert opinion that upon unable to cope with the loss of my wife and son, I had a nervous breakdown. The breakdown was so severe that my brain needed a way to repair itself, and that's where my son comes in. Apparently, it was easier for me to pretend as well as hallucinate that my son was still alive rather than to come to terms with both his and her deaths. A few unexpected tears rolled down my cheeks when she told me this. I'm not exactly sure why. Miss DeWitt continued to tell me that Dr. Harrison was very concerned over all of this. He tried his best to play along, but he couldn't stand to see me like this anymore. It seems that every time I went to his office with my son, he simply pretended that he was there. He also gave fake reactions when looking at blank footage of an empty crib. He did this for me as a friend, knowing that I had lost my family, and I couldn't take any more of what she was saying. It was too much. I attempted once more to get up and leave, but she begged me to stay. She told me to think of the little things that have happened to me. She said my brain was trying desperately to tell me that my son wasn't there. The reason I noticed my son's eyes looking so off is because the one and only time I saw his eyes were at the hospital after he had passed. He never laughs or cries because only living babies can do such things. The crying I had heard that night was only the memory of him crying when he was born. The only time he had ever shed a tear. The pictures vanishing in my dream were showing me that both my wife and my son are truly gone. What truly frightened me was coming to terms with his death. I let her finish before getting up and angrily walking by her to the door. She could tell that I didn't believe a word of what she had told me. As such, she tried one last time to reach out to me. She reminded me of how impossible everything was that had occurred with my son. She begged me to let her help. I turned around before opening the door, looking her straight in the eye, and said one last thing to her. "I'm sorry, Mr. Witt, but I will never give up my son." Hey there, everyone who's listening on YouTube, or those of you who are listening on the podcast. It's me, Mr. Creepypasta. And before you head out for the night, I just wanted to let you know about a couple of things. Without you, the show doesn't take place. So, if you guys would like to support the show, or if you guys would like to get your hands on a couple of cool little things whenever new things come out, check out patreon.com/MrCreepypasta, and any support that you guys show, I really appreciate. For everyone who's already donated to the Patreon, I really appreciate it. You guys are amazing. I thank you so much for that. If you guys are looking for more Creepypasta Storytime, there's a new video that's uploaded to this channel or uploaded to the podcast every Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday now. You can be able to get more from me at facebook.com/MrCreepypasta or on Twitter at MrCreepypasta and then the number 0. Thanks so much for listening, kids, and for your support. And sweet dreams.